What's going on, people? Welcome to Paint Points. As usual, I'm your host, Jake Painting. This podcast is proudly brought to you by the SB Nation Podcast Network and the Chain of Supers family. Coming to you live after the Timberwolves lost, their four-game win streak has been ended by the New Orleans Pelicans and Zion Williamson especially. They lose in overtime, 140 to 136. A fun game, ultimately not a fun result, but definitely one that is good for the tanking standings, especially with the Orlando Magic winning with a Cole Anthony game winner. Joining me to discuss the game and kind of, you know, everything around the Timberwolves at the moment is Kyle Tuggy, editor-in-chief at Chain of Supers, site manager, good guy, Timberwolves Twitter legend. Kyle, what's going on, man?
Stop. What's going on, dude? I'm, let's run this back. We, like we were talking about offline, we were all amped to talk about that five-game winning streak, and it kind of abruptly ended, so I think we should just, let's just jump right into it, right? They were up 119-109 with 4:22 left, and at the end of regulation, it was 123-123, so it doesn't take a mathematician to figure out that they were outscored 14-4 in the last 4.5 minutes. The Wolves' offense completely fell apart. I didn't, you know, we were talking about this before, but the last second shot for Russell, I didn't mind who took it, but I didn't love what the shot was. And I kind of, you were on this first, but I kind of felt like maybe, I thought Ant was going to go for 50. I'm tweeting out crazy shit about Ant and how good he is, and I'm attacking nerds. And then he kind of disappeared. So, like, I don't know. Walk me through what you thought of the last play and why would a coach run a play like that that has no action other than just one on one?
Yeah. Well, I think the first point is the reason that Finch runs that play and that a lot of coaches around the league run those isolation, you know, wind the clock down kind of plays is that it limits your, well, limits almost to a 0% chance your ability or your tendency to turn the ball over. And okay, yeah. when the score is tied and, you know, you've got 20 seconds on the clock, the last thing you want is to throw an errant pass or to, you know, have Lonzo Ball jump a passing lane and get in there, and all of a sudden you lose that game in regulation. So that's not kind of forgiving the fact that I don't think it was very well executed at all. But that's the reason why they run those plays. D'Angelo Russell dribbling at the top of the key 15 seconds completely limits, you know, the fact that they could turn the ball over. That being said, you know, D'Lo was, what, 1 of 9 from three at that point. Ant had been cooking for most of the game outside of, you know, kind of the last 8 minutes of the fourth quarter. Cat had been really good from deep as well. Cat in the post, you know, or Cat kind of anywhere, you know, our friend Dane Moore's always saying that if you need 1 point to win, you go with Cat because he can just get a bucket from anywhere. But like you've said to me before, we can't kind of jump around and pop the champagne every time D'Angelo Russell makes one of these crazy clutch isolation threes and then kind of getting on here and tell everyone how bad it was when he misses one, because these misses are going to happen. I think that really it's more on what happened in the 5, 6, 7 minutes leading up to that shot that lost the Wolves the game. And I don't even think that they played that badly. I don't think it was a, you know, kind of early season collapse at the end of a game where they just stopped doing everything that had got them that lead. I just think the shots stop falling, and sometimes the rim just doesn't want to play the game. You know, the players start missing shots that they'd normally hit, and I think that they were still running pretty good actions throughout the whole fourth quarter, but the shots just stopped going in, and then defensively, they were the Wolves defensively, which they'd been all game, and they've been all season, and that was that they just couldn't get a stop when they needed to, and Zion Williamson was a freight train. He couldn't stop getting fouled, which, you know, I think a few of them were questionable, but, you know, he's a hard guy to stop, man. He pretty much fouled out the entire team on his own tonight, and that was kind of the difference. When it got to OT and you had no Cat, no McDaniels, and you're trying to still get stops, it became pretty much impossible. And I think that was the crux of it right there, is that it just wasn't the Timberwolves' night tonight in the fourth quarter, and that really hurt them. What were your thoughts kind of on the game as a whole and on that fourth quarter collapse, I guess, especially?
Oh, I think we got to, like, just snort some coffee or some espresso here, just because I think our general tone is defeated, which is, as we said before, like, it's kind of batshit crazy that, like, it's May and we're, like, sad about losses, right? Like, because outside of this weird trend where the Timberwolves now get punched in the face every first quarter, like, I watched that first quarter and they're down by 8 or 9, and I was like, oh, you just kind of feel a vibe, right, when you start watching these game stuff. I really thought after the first quarter that they were going to win the game. And then they did exactly what they've done for the last, like, 10 days. They just outplayed and actually made some good defensive stops in the second and third quarter and started to hit shots. And they got it up, like I said, to that 119-109 with 420. I mean, the Pelicans are one of the biggest glass jaw teams in the league in terms of once they get punched in the face, they're kind of done. And then to Stan Van Gundy's credit, I guess, even though I'm not sure how good of a coach Stan Van Gundy is, but he just got the ball in Zion's hands, and they took out a Brandon Ingram's, and that's been a big national story all year, is whose team is it when everyone really knows whose team it should be. And they just said, Zion, point Zion, and he just, there's like Nas, Jaden, Cat, doesn't matter who it is, they're giving him 5.5 feet on the perimeter, they're daring him to shoot, and he still gets to the rim. Like, that is like Marvel character shit for him to be like, hey, I'm gonna give you all this space, I want you to shoot, and he's like, no, actually I'm gonna go to the rim, and he still got there. Yeah. So he was phenomenal. I mean, he fouled out the whole Wolves front court, which is another just impressive thing. I think I saw a stat somewhere where he had like 24, I can't remember how many points he finished with, but he had like 24 points on layups, 4 points on dunks, and then that was like his whole point distribution was literally like at the rim. Like, go look at his shot chart.
Yeah.
It was insane.
He did not take one jump shot.
No.
He did not take one jump
shot. He didn't have to.
I think that it's actually, I say this knowing full well that teams have thrown a bunch of different coverages at Zion and pretty much none of them worked. But I don't know. I think it's the same with Ben Simmons as well, that like I don't like the tactic of giving them a 5 meter runway.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Yeah. Yeah.
I think that when they, in the few times where mainly McDaniels kind of got up into his airspace at the three-point line, I think you, like, when you have a good defender like McDaniels, you, and Vanderbilt, I think, who's been really good on those bigger wing kind of guys lately, I think if you get up on them early and trust yourself to stay on their hip rather than just letting them,
yeah, that's a good point,
like, get ahead. Like, once Zion gets 4 steps unabated, you're not stopping him. He just, and like, whether you foul him or not, it's going to look like a foul because he's just going to like crunch you in half.
That might be like the, if the Pelicans make the play-in game or the playoffs, that might be like the way smart teams scout him is to actually pick him up whenever he gets the ball. Like, you know, even full court or half court, like, don't give him space. And Jaden was, to your credit, I kind of flubbed on that. Jaden was picking him up like tighter, but he's the only guy that can move his feet well enough. I mean, no discredit to V8, but like he can't move his feet as well as Jaden. But he was doing too. But like when they would put Nas on him for a little bit, Nas had to give him that space because he can't move his feet.
Right.
But
Well, that's the problem just in general, is that like no matter who you put on him, there's some sort of matchup problem. Like Nas isn't fast enough. Cat's not fast enough to kind of stay with him. McDaniels isn't big enough. Like I tweeted out, you know, how good has Jaden McDaniels been this season at playing above his weight class and kind of dealing with power forwards and even centers at times. Like he made Rudy Gobert look like a sniffling child a few days ago. But Zion is huge, man. Like no human in the world has ever been built like him.
Imagine too, like it's dude, from when we talked in like November and like hope Jaden would just crush dudes in the G League bubble to the fact of like today, May 1st, it's like he just casually, without a care in the world, transitions from shutting down Luka to then guarding Kyrie or KD or James Harden and then Zion Williamson. Like he's going from one guy who might weigh 190 to a guy who weighs 270, and just he's so good. And the sad thing is that as soon as he fouled out, I mean, it was over. Like, they would have done everyone a benefit to just call the game, because as soon as he fouled out, the Wolves had no chance. Because like you said, Carl can't guard him at the perimeter. Nas can't guard him really anywhere. And then I thought Vanderbilt, who's been a revelation these last couple weeks, was the second best guy to come up. But he gives it's up tough. A lot of weight too. So
yeah, it's tough. And tonight just wasn't a Josh Okogie game, who has been excellent lately. Kind of not ruined, but put a damper on the fact that I'm about to write about how excellent he's been lately, especially offensively. But he played 17 minutes tonight, Josh, which is way down on what he'd been playing lately, obviously, as a starter. You know, D'Lo didn't have it going from three. Cat didn't really have it going all night. Like, it's weird because Cat didn't have it going all night, and he had 28, 14, 3 assists and 3 steals. Like, that's where we're at right now with Karl Anthony Towns. But it just felt like all night, even when they were in the driver's seat, it was going to be a game that they pulled off despite not playing exceptionally well. And I think that just kind of came back to bite them a little bit towards the end. And had a few bad possessions in the fourth quarter, and kind of got the Chris Finch, I think, treatment a little bit, where, you know, if you can't, like, we need to go to the more experienced players if you're not going to be able to do it. And I don't know if that was the greatest tactic from my man Chris Finch, who I adore.
Yeah, but
it was a tough night. Just a tough night, I think, to win against a team that had Zion rolling. Sometimes you just get punched in the face by a superstar, and I thought that was just the difference in the end.
And you know, I think, to kind of put a bow on it, but probably transition to what you and I thought we were going to talk about, credit to Dane Moore, because he said this the other night when him and I recorded, but like front offices tank all the time, but players don't tank. It doesn't, whether it be football, soccer, baseball, you know, whatever, like any sport, basketball, like, players don't tank. Like, when you get out on the court, you play your ass off. So these games, I mean, and, you know, when I pull myself back, and tomorrow I'll have some optimistic tweet that I'll send out, but like, it was really the best of both worlds tonight, right? Because Carl, D'Lo, and Ant all combined to, I mean, you're starting to see, right, this big three, like, every night you look in the box score, these guys combine for 70, 80, you know, sometimes 90 points. And they just, of all the times they did all these good things to wrap up games and close out games, they just didn't do it tonight. But I think that's what's good, is like, I and you would have been happy if they would have finished the season on like a 14 game winning streak, right? Like, that would have been sick to be the Wolves, like we've been talking about the Phoenix Suns in the bubble. If the Wolves closed out on this awesome winning streak, that's cool. But they did get the loss tonight, and you already touched on it, the Magic won, and there's weird stuff happening with like the Thunder beat the Celtics, and I think if I can swallow my pride,
Thunder also lost by 60 tonight.
Don't even get me started on that. That's an embarrassment what they're doing. Like, people want to just praise Sam Presti for all he did, but it's like, he's doing the same thing Hinkie did, Sam Hinkie. And like, Hinkie got thrown out of Philly, but that's embarrassing. Like, I think if you go look at the box score, Sabonis had like 24, 12, and 11 for the Pacers in the first half. It's a damn shame the Thunder couldn't put their $30 million center on the court, Al Horford, to defend him. But don't get me started on that. But I guess my point is that the Wolves, you know, they were competitive. They didn't get hurt or anything, and they kind of learned some stuff. Like I said, that last 420 was so choppy. I don't know if it was Russell, I don't know if it was Carl, I don't know if it was Ricky, or I don't know if it was Chris Finch, but they kind of froze Ant out a little bit. And I think it's okay to do that still, because he's a rookie still, right? Like, he is a rookie for the next 8 or 9 remaining games. But I think this team's going to have to figure out this summer, in addition to roster stuff. I really believe, and the Brooklyn Nets, I think, have to figure it out too. Like, I think you do have to have a pecking order. It doesn't have to be firm. It doesn't have to be like, I'm always one, you're always two. But you kind of have to have a little more solidified there, because I really do think if they go to Ant those last couple possessions, I think he got to the free throw line 11 times. They couldn't guard him either. I mean, he's not as big as Zion, but they didn't have, with Josh Hart out, I mean, they didn't have anyone they could put on him to defend him. And it's just, when he gets rolling, that team feeds off that kid's energy more than they do a big Carl shot or a clutch D'Lo bucket. So I think it was a good learning lesson. It was, you know, quote unquote growing pains for the team, because the Wolves, it's May and the team's like, we should have won that game. And like, what the hell? Like, what? Like, 2 months ago, you and I were happy if they just didn't lose by 30. And now they're like, we should be pissed off that we lost that game because, I mean, there's no better way to say it. Like, they blew it. They kind of choked down the end. Yeah. You score 4 points in 4 minutes, you choke.
Yeah. And look, I think that, like you said, it's just one of those things that, you know, you kind of have to brush off. In the overarching kind of overall scheme of things, like, the vibe should be good around the team right now. And to me, it is good. Like, this team has, as much as, you know, they're still going to finish with one of the 4 or 5 worst records, the vibe, the future, kind of the outlook of the team, I feel like has completely changed in the last 15, 20 games. You know, longer than even this win streak. They're competitive every night now. I never feel like they're going to get blown out. Even when they do get blown out, it's kind of a surprise. Like, I just feel like when Kat, D'Lo, Edwards are out there, this team has a really good chance to compete, and I guess that transitions us into what was your thoughts throughout this win streak? Do you think that, you know, they should be winning? Do you think that it will mean much? Is it, you know, I know a lot of people kind of dismiss the thought of late season wins when a lot of teams are kind of winding down on their season. How do you feel? How much do you think that win streak, plus, I guess, you know, the wins before, they could have been on a 7-game winning streak if Tyrese Halliburton hadn't have stepped out of bounds and put his hand over the referee's eyes while he did so.
Hey, that's the kind of whistle Rookie of the Years get, man. Like, they just, you know, unanimous Rookie of the Years they get. But no, I mean, I am, like, an optimistic fan of the worst professional team in American sports, like male sports. So I obviously look at things through such a slanted prism already, but I subscribe 300% to the idea of just, like, it's so important for the youngest team in the league to get important winning reps, or just reps in clutch time, or reps in games that are close. Like, you had talked about that Orlando Magic game. The guy who hit that shot was Cole Anthony. He's a rookie too. He's a huge part of what Orlando's trying to do after they burned it down to the ground by trading everyone away. Like, I just think it's so important to have these young guys playing in meaningful moments. And I mean, go back and look at that win streak we're talking about, right? Like, the Kings, I think the Kings are just far enough out of the play-in game. I don't think they're going to really make any noise, but they're beating Utah, right? Like, the best record in the league at the time, right? They're beating the Warriors, who are in a must-win situation with a, you know, a sneaky MVP candidate with Steph. Tonight, the Pelicans,
they beat Miami a few games earlier than that, yep, as well.
Yeah, and they beat Chicago that one night too. And this was a couple weeks ago, but when the Bulls were like, they needed to keep winning to keep their spot before Zach LaVine went out with the COVID stuff. So they're beating good teams, right? They're not just beating up on yes, they beat the Rockets, but, like, they're not just beating up on all these low teams. So I think winning is so important. And that's why tonight, like, it's probably good that they mix in a loss for the standings because, yeah, at the end of the day, it still would be nice to have somewhat the best chance at percentage. But, we've watched this. I know the Wolves jumped up the lottery and got Anthony Edwards, right? And, like, that was huge. But I've watched so many other lotteries, man, that don't go their way, that I'm not going to pin my hopes and dreams on them going 2-14 to close out the last month and a half of the season. And then that's when the narratives can really start, right? Like, if the Wolves would go on to lose 11 straight or lose games like the Thunder were, that's when the blood's in the water. That's when the piranhas start writing the articles about, does Carl want out? Should they do this? Should they do that? I think there's real value in finishing the season strong. And then, you know, before you leave the locker room, that last game in a couple weeks, like, hey, like, grabbing the young guys and be like, we're gonna meet up this summer, we're gonna work out together, come to LA, like, we're gonna do that shit. I think it's a huge thing. I don't know how you can want this team to just go into the summer on the lowest of lows when they already have, like, a weighted coin of, they don't even have a 50% chance of keeping their pick. So if and you're my draft guy, you and, like, Tyler Metcalf and stuff, but if the top three is the top three, right? If it's going to be Cade, it's going to be Mobley, and it's going to be Suggs, the Wolves aren't going to give any of those guys to the Warriors. Like, because it can't, because they're top three protected. So if they give up the fifth pick now, or the sixth pick, or the seventh pick, like, that's not the end of the world. Because if this team can show that, like, they have their big three and they just need to kind of gel more and tweak the edges, I think that's so much more important than whatever the hell the Thunder are trying to do or the Rockets are trying to do, or even the Magic. So, but what do you think? Like, do you, are you team win, or should I say team try to win? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I am. And you know this, anyone who listens to the podcast knows that I don't think the Wolves can have a bigger, you know, one player kind of come into their team and make more of a difference than if they keep their draft pick. Like, for the longest time, I was completely on board with tanking, and I'm pretty sure I was on board with tanking while it was still actually a question, you know, around the fan base, whether they should try and win. I was on board with tanking the minute Karl Anthony Towns announced that he had COVID. Like, that's, you know, it's been, I was on board with tanking from 10, 15 games into the season, because Cade Cunningham, Evan Mobley, Jalen Suggs, especially Mobley or Cunningham, are exceptional talents, and both would be massive for this team. Like, this team's ceiling would, you know, go through the roof, which makes no sense because a ceiling can't go through a roof. But you know what I mean. Like, if they were to acquire one of those two dudes, they'd be, the future would be brighter than ever, especially with Ann, with Carl, with D'Lo, you know, with whoever. But on the other hand, like you just said, like, this team, it's so counterproductive to encourage a guy like Anthony Edwards, who's been criticized for losing wherever he's gone for his whole of his career and for not being a winning basketball player, to encourage him to, that it's bad, like, to kind of put in his mind that it's bad to take over games and win them. Karl Anthony Towns, exactly the same. He's been criticized for being a losing player his whole career.
Also, imagine the optics of, like, D'Lo and Kat in street clothes sitting on the bench while the team gets their ass kicked. Like, that, right, you know how many people are pulling still images of that and being like, are these guys going to be here? Like, start, I mean, there's a couple of losers already online who, the blue checkmark syndrome that gets into their brain and they think that they know shit, that are already trying to write things like Carl wants out and stuff that have no sources whatsoever and, like, just the biggest losers in the world. But I mean, just, like, those people would be just, like I said, blood, like, sharks in the water of, if the Wolves are just getting spanked trying to lose like the Thunder are doing. Because I think the Thunder are really, truly the only team that are really, I mean, the Rockets are tanking, but the Thunder are doing it to an egregious exceptionally level. Yeah, they're doing exceptionally well. They lost by 60. But I think that you got to figure out what you have. And Gersh said that at the trade deadline, but also too, to your point, because you said that you were pro tanking for a while. I was too, but that was also like, when the season got off to this stupid start, right? And D'Lo,
and that was when they had no chance to win. Like, that's when they didn't show any signs of life of winning. Like, now, I don't want them to go out there and start losing when I know that this team can win games, yeah, or can at least be competitive in games. Like you said, ultimately, tonight, a game like tonight is kind of the ideal situation. They played pretty well. Things didn't go their way down the stretch. They lost to a team who were competing really hard to get into the play-in tournament themselves. But I just think that, yeah, it's counterproductive to not encourage the players to win. It would look horrible, like you said, if they were going full tank mode and Kat was sitting out and D'Lo was sitting out. And I can guarantee the fan base that's, you know, even the ones that are really annoyed that they're winning would be just as annoyed if they were doing that. And finally, like, the optics, talk about optics. The optics, if they lose 11 straight games and then get the fifth pick and give it Golden State.
Yep. Oh my God.
It's as bad as anything that could happen. Like, it's
great take. Great take.
The only way that this deal, which, you know, let's put it an underline underneath it, Justin Rosa shouldn't have made this pick top three protected, or he shouldn't have traded the pick. It wasn't a good deal, even though we are big D'Angelo Russell fans, and I think he has been excellent. We'll get to him soon. I want to talk more about D'Lo, but they shouldn't have given up that pick. But the only way to salvage some sort of reputation, some sort of those optics on this pick, is to finish the season strong. Like,
I think the number always changes, and I don't do a good job of always remembering it. But I could have sworn that the Wolves were like 10-6 with Carl and D'Lo, or 12-8 or something. I thought they had above 500 record, or maybe it was with him, those two and Ant. But my point is that the record with those three guys all on the floor together is good. And if you can finish the season with whatever the record with Carl and D'Lo, or Carl, D'Lo, and Ant being, you know, above 500, that's a big thing for when we get into the summer and it's hot and no one has shit to talk about and we start going like, hey, you know, like if they would have finished on an 11-game losing streak, you know the record with Carl and D'Lo and Ant is, you know, a 32% winning clip. Like that's just, that shit just adds in the narrative and the optics and all that stuff. So trying to win games also too, like I wanted to say this a couple minutes ago, but like I was pro tanking a couple months ago when D'Lo had one leg and Carl had COVID and Ant was simply not the player he is now. You know what I mean? Cause it's like, well, shit, we probably need another guy to, because this team might not be very good. And now you're seeing, you bring in Chris Finch, Carl comes back, his wrist looks healthy. D'Lo looks completely different from a health standpoint than he's ever looked in Minnesota. And Anthony Edwards, again, not to beat a dead horse, but not to ruin the nerds on Twitter that just are sleeping in bed with their spreadsheets, but like Anthony Edwards is a completely different player than he was in January and February. And it's like, okay, now we have something here. So now let's start to see if the pieces fit around. Like if this team would have just thrown it away for the last month, we probably don't see Jared Vanderbilt get kind of re-energized to the point where it's like, he's kind of like a must sign guy. He's a restricted free agent, but you saw him in winning moments be like the second best defender for big, you know, a big defender behind Jaden McDaniels. Josh Okogie's renaissance that you want to write about. I think tonight was just a matchup. Like, I just think Josh didn't match up against anyone that well.
Right. But, and I think they needed to keep going offensively because they knew that they weren't going to be able to beat New Orleans unless they scored 135 themselves. And sometimes Josh just isn't conducive to that.
Josh has been, I'm glad he's been awesome. And again, Chris Finch unlocked him again. Like he's been, I wouldn't say he's a foundational player, but he's an important asset for them to keep. So yeah, not to go circles around this, but I think winning or trying to win is really important.
I don't think they're talented enough to, like, to win to the point where they get the seventh pick. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I think they're going to win more games than they were previously, but I don't think that they're going to win 10 straight games and completely, like, destroy their chances of getting this pick. I think no matter what, they're still going to have, you know, the 30% chance or whatever it is. It just...
there are going to be... I can't stress this enough, and you know this because you are so much deeper into draft coverage than I am. But like, there are going to be players drafted this summer that are not going to be good. We're already seeing it, or maybe not be good, but are going to take a long time to show whether or not they are good. I mean, look back at this lottery, right? There are some stars in, I think, Anthony Edwards, LaMelo Ball, Tyrese Haliburton. There's also guys that have just completely flamed out that are in that top five, top seven area. So I'm not super worried. And again, the reason I say that is because only three teams are going to get those top three guys that I think and you think are kind of locks to be good in Suggs, Mobley, and Cunningham. But five or six or seven or eight teams are going to go into the finish line with their pants around their ankles. You know what I mean? So like, if you don't get one of those guys, do you want to be the team like the Wolves that you lost your pick, but you had some real momentum with the guys you're actually building around? Or you missed on those top three guys and you're the Rockets and you lost your pick, or you're the Thunder and you're drafting fourth in a three-person draft and you lost like 30 of your last 38 games. So I just think winning's important. I think teaching the young guys, we talk about this all the time, but Ant, Naz Reid, Jaden, like they're like young dog, like puppies. Like you got to classically condition puppies to like play the right way, do the right thing. And you reward them with winning. You don't reward them with Instagram posts. You don't reward them with Zoom media sessions. You reward them with winning. And the more this team can win and teach the right habits, the less shit Chris Finch has to like dig out this summer and this fall with training camp to kind of fix, because he's had to fix. How much do you love Chris Finch?
Don't get me started. You know how much you love Jaden McDaniels? That's how much I love Chris Finch.
We've done this 1,000 times and people are just going to be rolling over in their graves right now. Like Ryan Saunders, great guy, but like, I don't see the game as well as a lot of you. And I can, like, it's like watching, I don't know, man, it's like drinking water versus drinking like rosé. Like, I mean, Chris Finch is just a goddamn magician, which is why I was bummed with the play call he ran at the end. I think you kind of enlightened me on this idea that maybe they ran something simple to kind of narrow their margin of error. Like, if anyone's getting a shot, it's us. That was like galaxy brain. You're so smart on that shit. But it would have been cool to like have him run one of his magical plays where everyone runs towards the half court line, you know, and then someone gets an easy layup. But I mean, like, what's been the biggest change? Has it been like sets? Has it been rotation? Has it been what?
Let's take a quick break for an ad, because I'm going to go on, you know, a Chris Finch tangent, and then we'll come back and I want to talk Chris Finch and our favorite things about him. All right, we are back. You asked me just before we went to the break what my favorite things about Chris Finch are.
Tell me.
Kind of what has stood out to me. There's a few things. I think, first of all, I think he is the biggest reason that they've won these games. Obviously, you know, Karl-Anthony Towns has been great. Anthony Edwards has taken 4 or 5 different leaps this season. And D'Lo's come back healthy, you know, firing, hitting shots. Tonight, he was so good passing the ball. That's gone underrated against New Orleans, because he put on a live dribble passing masterclass in this game. There's someone next door is banging on the wall, so I'm sorry.
I can't hear it. Dude, that pass he had to Wancho was stupid. Under the basket, where he kind of looks away and just fires in this fastball. I mean, I didn't watch a lot of D'Angelo Russell before he was a Timberwolf, but I knew he was an underrated passer, but dude, he is like hella underrated. Like, he makes, when he gets kind of vibing, you can see it. He's bouncing around.
Right.
And you made it, you tweeted that up, like that live ball passing. It's crazy.
Yeah, that's a great point. I think when he starts feeling himself, he starts feeling himself as a passer as well. Yep. Like he kind of has different modes. Like he gets hot as a shooter. We saw that multiple times since he's come back. He's had 2 games where he hit 6 or 7 threes in the first half. Like, and then tonight he was feeling himself as a passer. He had a live dribble kind of cross court pass to Wancho for a 3. I'm not sure if it went in or not, but it was a great pass. Then he just started diamond dudes up, like, that were cutting. He hit McLaughlin once. He hit Nas in transition with that no-look pass.
Dude, like, that one to McLaughlin where he kind of threw it over the top?
Oh. Yeah. Anyway, I've kind of detoured from my point here. is that Finch, all of this, I think, comes down to Finch, because we know from their past, I guess, failures that mainly Russell and Towns need to be put in the right context and the right situation to be winning players. And we love both of those guys, but the fact is that they just haven't won enough games for their career for varying reasons. You know, supporting cast probably being the biggest of those reasons. But I just think that Finch is immediately, without a training camp, without more than probably 10 or 15 practices max, he's figured out how to use these guys the best way for them to all be synergistic together, the best way to keep them staggered. It's just, I think he's just been awesome in that regard. I think that all 3 of those guys are playing their best basketball of their career. Obviously, and it's his first season, but the best, you know, basketball of his season under Finch. And I don't think that's a coincidence. I don't think they all of a sudden woke up and decided they were going to be better players and be more impactful in terms of getting wins for the team. I think that Finch has just masterclassed where to put those guys and how to play them. And then secondly, and it kind of, I guess, ties into this point, is with his with Finch's ability to squeeze the most juice out of his personnel. He's done it all down the roster. Like, it's not just the stars that have played better. Like, Josh Okogie was probably the worst offensive player in the league for a solid portion of this season. His defense was still very good, but he was so bad offensively that he couldn't even get on the court. Juancho Hernangomez was traveling quickly down the path of worst Timberwolves signings of all time.
And he's been good.
He's been good, and I've openly stated that I am not a Juancho fan. And I still think that he's been pretty average defensively. But even there, he stepped up. D'Lo stepped up defensively. And that's because they're running things. They're making life simple for those guys on defense. And then offensively, they've just got into a rhythm, because the sets that have been ran are conducive to scoring for them. Like Juancho's coming off pin downs. He's in actions where he's the run, like the action is ran for him to be a shooter. Him and D'Lo just have an awesome, relationship on the court. Yep. Like Jack Borman has noted that on Twitter. I just think it's an awesome point from Jack. But those two together are really good. And that's it all comes down to the thing that I've complained about all year. If you listen to the podcast, you're probably sick of me hearing this, that Ryan Saunders' offense was an eyesore and just terrible for this team. And Finch has come in and, look at all these guys thriving.
And Chris,
Jared Vanderbilt's doing good things. There's not one player on this team, maybe outside of Jarrett Culver, who just, the injury and just all around kind of not being very good things.
Jarrett Culver has one healthy ankle, and I would still maybe take him over Jackson Hayes, by the way. Jackson Hayes was you want to talk about bad draft picks. I don't see it with him, but that's another topic. But I think it goes, not to tie everything back into the winning and losing and tankathon standings, but Chris Finch is another one of the reasons why, if you can strip away how my personality might be optimistic, he's one of the reasons why I don't really give a shit what happens with the pick. I mean, yes, I do want one of those top three guys, but I just believe in him so much that he has brought out the best of this kind of new big, quote unquote, how they call them, big three. That that's why I think if they can keep showing this promise, they don't, like you said, they don't get blown out. They're healthy and they kind of stick it to teams. Like, it would have been cool if we could have hopped on here after that Warriors game. Even when Steph was going off in that third quarter, I never thought during that Warriors game the Wolves were going to lose. That's insanity that the Wolves are playing the Warriors, and I thought they were going to win that game the whole time. Chris Finch is out coaching guys on a nightly basis that are considered top 10 coaches. We might have to round up the troops this summer and do a top 15 coaches, because I've been thinking about it. And I mean, his record's not going to support it, but I don't know if there's 10 NBA coaches I'm taking over Chris Finch from just a coaching standpoint. And he's out. And it's very crazy too. Yes, they lost to the Pelicans. That was kind of just some late game execution, but he has outcoached the hell out of guys like Stan Van Gundy or other guys that are you would think were on more of a Ryan Saunders level. He just blows them out of the water, and it's crazy. It's rotations, it's gut feeling sometimes, just trusting guys. It's using timeouts that he doesn't let these 12-0 runs happen to his young team. It could be a 2-0 run, and he's screw this. Let's draw something up. Let's try to get a play. He's been probably, we'll never talk about it, right? Because you don't talk about a coach, but he's probably been the second most impactful storyline of this season is how much he's turned this thing around, because he's made assets, like you said, that looked shitty. Another reason why winning's important, maybe a guy like Jared Vanderbilt is an asset in a sign-in trade this summer, or maybe Josh Okogie has some life in a trade with someone. Everyone on that Wolves roster had no trade value the night that they lost to the Knicks and Ryan Saunders was still cashing checks. Everyone looked so much worse than they do now, and that's a credit to Finch.
Yeah, and, you've probably heard this number before, but I'll throw it out there to kind of, for the preamble, for the point I'm about to make, is that in the 29 games since the All-Star break, Minnesota is second in the league in net rating. In the fourth quarter, they have a 121.9 offensive rating and a 109.8 defensive rating in the fourth. I know that obviously coaching is important at all times, and it's a huge kind of component to winning games. But I do feel like the fourth quarter is when coaching really kind of gets underlined. We saw that with Saunders. Saunders wasn't a very good coach, but the Timberwolves could still play good for three quarters and then lose. How many times have we watched the Timberwolves lose against good teams where you can tell that this coach is just out coaching dudes in the last quarter from other teams. And that's exactly what Finch is doing, because you look at the numbers that matches the eye test is when it comes down to the moments where you're almost running plays. Every play, there's no more read or react. There's no more kind of, you know, just wing it as you go through the game and try and get into your identity. When it comes down to running plays at the end of a game for the last 5-6 minutes, the Timberwolves have been dominant lately. Well, plus 12 net rating. They're below the Clippers. They're above the Sixers, Jazz, Celtics, Blazers, Lakers, and Nets. They're the next five after them. Like, it's not a coincidence that all of the best teams in the league are elite in the fourth quarter, and all of the best coaches in the league, you know, are employed by those teams that are really good in the last 12 minutes of a game. And Chris Finch is one of those guys. He has fit in seamlessly as a great coach. Like you said, the record's not going to support that he is a great coach, but he was given shit on a platter. Well, and he's turned it into caviar.
Now, okay. That's so poetic. I love you. This was a couple nights ago. This was, I think, after the Wolves win, when they had that 2-game win streak, when they beat the Jazz. But I said this on, I just want to build off what you said, but I'd said this on Dane's podcast, but there was a tweet from Alan Horton where it's like, post All-Star break, wins after being down 15 or more points. The Wolves had 6 at that point, and the next closest was 2. And everyone that had 2 was playoff teams. The Nets, the Celtics, the Nuggets, the Clippers, the Knicks, the Blazers, the Jazz. So it's like, I think your stat, which was phenomenal, and I might ask you to say it again about fourth quarter net rating, like, and that was since All-Star break. I think the Wolves are also like maybe 14 and 16 since the All-Star break or something. I mean, they're not 500, but it's pretty close. But what that tells me...
Yeah. I think 13 and 16. I don't know if this is updated for tonight, but I think it has been updated.
So 13 and 16, let me have an optimistic tweak if they win this game
tonight. This is a team that's won 20 games.
Right. Like, right, I'm just 13 saying, like...
16 it's all relative. 13 and 16 doesn't sound that good when you're... If you're the Clippers or if you're the Sixers, but this is a team who's won 7 more games than that for the entire season.
Right.
Like, so they're 7-40 or something in the rest of those games.
Right. And all I wanted to say is, on your point, is like that net rating thing, because my dad's listening. He doesn't have a clue what the hell you're talking about. But like, to have that net rating and then to also be in close games, or to like be having comebacks or be borderline 500, like that's really impressive. Like, that's the type of shit that you... Gerson Rosas talked about the day after he didn't do anything at the trade deadline. Like, I got to see what we got. And I think this last week or so, or hell, even when they were losing a couple games, like these last couple weeks have shown you that they have something. And I know that this franchise is a dumpster fire. And I know that there's so many things that go against that, but I don't live in that historic moment. Like, I live in the now of what I think this team has. And I think this team has a lot more than all the other teams right now that are humping them in the tankathon standings. I think they have far more to build off of, because a lot of those teams aren't going to get Cade Cunningham. You know what I mean? They might get a Mobley, and I think Mobley's going to be really good, but he might not. Like, I think these guys have some impressive – the Wolves have some impressive players, and to me it all ties back to what Anthony Edwards has done. I mean, I know, without calling out names and giving this guy clout because he's a loser, but like – I know we were fighting with some people on Twitter tonight, but if you're not watching Anthony Edwards right now, you're missing out. Like, that dude is special. Like, you said Carl had a quiet game, whatever he finished with, like 28 and 14 or whatever. I didn't know Anthony Edwards had like 9 rebounds and 6 assists. And we thought he got frozen out basically the fourth quarter. Like, he was flirting with a 30-10 for most of, you know, he was on triple-double watch going into the fourth quarter. So it's just crazy. It's crazy to see what Chris Finch has done. It's crazy to see how healthy D'Lo's looked coming off that knee injury. He's been a completely different guy. And it's, more than anything, man, I think this team goes with Anthony Edwards. I think by next year we're going to be talking about the team lives and dies with Anthony Edwards as their best player.
Well, that's what Ricky Rubio said in his post-game presser the other night.
That's a good point, yeah.
I think at this point it's kind of like you can't go to any subsection of Timberwolves conversation without tying it back to Ant or Finch. Like, obviously Cat is always going to be present, D'Lo is the same thing, but I just think that Ant and Finch have been they're what's different about this team right now is like, Ant's having 20-point fourth quarters against Steph Curry, dueling with Steph Curry and winning games for them. Finch is running kind of decoy actions that get open layups with 4 seconds left to win the game. Like, it just feels different at the moment. And it all, I guess, ties back to the tanking as well, which has been kind of the theme flowing through this episode, is that it's I think you made a great point just then that it's different. They are a different team to Orlando, to Detroit, to Houston, and to OKC, because they're all teams that are trying their best, and in OKC's case, they're doing a damn good job to bottom out completely. Like, they want to get Cade Cunningham or Mobley, and then they want to get someone next season as well. And they want to be a team, they want to build over 3, 4, 5 years to get to where they want to be. Minnesota aren't that, and they cannot be that with Towns. They can't, you know, they can't do another full rebuild. They're trying to add another piece to the puzzle that gets them into the playoff hunt next season. And I think with Ant's development and Chris Finch's coaching nous, and the fact that this team's just starting to win more games or to look better in every game, like, that's the difference between this team and these tanking, you know, these quartet of tanking teams that are kind of around them in the standings. It's that Minnesota need to show something because they don't have time to bottom out and to do it all again.
And if you think Chris Finch is as smart, by the way, as you and I do, I'm pretty sure that guy probably will watch tonight's game film and be like, I next time we're in that situation, the ball's going to Ant. So again, kind of like, I don't just think it's the young guys who can't legally buy a beer that are learning. I think it's like the coaching staff and, like, you know, Gerson Rosas figuring out, like, okay, I like Jared Vanderbilt. I only say this because he's a restricted free agent, so he's not guaranteed to be back. For Gers to be like, hey, you know what? We probably need another, like, big-bodied defender. Because the Naz Reid thing, like, Naz Reid needs to get at least one, like, most improved vote, because that dude is just, on a nightly basis now, just giving you 14-8. But, like, an efficient 14-8, and he's throwing a live body out there. But, I mean, they need another guy behind Jaden, because there's too many times when, again, when Jaden McDaniels, of all people, fouls out in a game, and you and I go, shit, this one's over. Like, that's probably not the best sign for how the back end of the roster is built out, but no, I'm with you. I don't know how, if you and I want to turn this into a 9-hour podcast, but the Anthony Edwards thing for me is Chris Finch is the number two storyline. I mean, I know Karl Anthony Towns is good. I knew Russell was hurt before he was kind of publicly hurt, and I knew he would be better, but to see what Ant did in April, compared to what he was doing in January, to see how well he gets to the line. I mean, I remember for the longest time he was getting 4 free throws a game, not getting whistles tonight. He got 11 free throws and he should have had 16. It's impressive, man. The kid's 19 years old. He has flaws defensively, some bad shots, but, like, look at where he is compared to some of the other guys in the top 10 of this last draft. They got injured or not. Like, even James Wiseman, who you can't bag on him, right? Because he's injured. But he has so much growing up to do and developing that he's missing out on. And Ant's just running laps around those guys right now. And he's going to be, again, I just think he's good. He's the most important person on this in this franchise going forward.
How much of Ant's development over the last, because it has been the last 2 months, he's at about, this is off the top, so I'm not, you know, don't quote me on this, but he's had about 23 points a game, about 43% shooting, around 34% from three, you know, five rebounds, 2 assists. Like, that's kind of been his steady stat line over the last 2 months. How much of that, compared to what we saw early in the season, is on Finch, do you think? Or is that just natural progression?
190% of it is on Chris Finch, I think. Like, I mean, I really do think, like, I thought I saw a stat or something that since the All-Star break, he's like 9th in the league in steals. And I know that steals aren't the be-all end-all of a mark of a good defender. But I think if you think Chris Finch is a wizard who is mostly playing 3D chess sometimes with his young guys that don't know what they're doing, like, I think Chris Finch has told Ant to hunt steals because it activates him on defense. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think we want prime 26-year-old Anthony Edwards maybe hunting steals as much as he does as a 19-year-old. But I think Chris Finch saw it as a way, going back to my puppy analogy of, like, maybe this is the best way to get Ant moving defensively. Rather than just standing there watching shit happen, have him just running around trying to steal the ball. Because if he steals the ball it's going to be a poster dunk on the other side. He can get out in transition. So I think the and again, he's still not by any metric a good defender, but I just think a lot of it's Chris Finch. I just think a lot of it has Ryan Saunders was like a really good friend to Ant and really tried to build him up. It wasn't like he was an asshole to him, but and he played him a lot, right? It's not like he was a Tibbs who was buried Obi Toppin underneath the Madison Square Garden court, but I just think Chris Finch is just, again, he's just a smarter coach. He's just better. He knows how to get Ant to the line. He knows how to do things with the other chess pieces on the court that then will help Ant get to the rim or, you know, get better shots. So I think it's all Chris Finch. Am I crazy? I mean, I know you love Chris Finch, but it's all him.
I think that the talent was always there with Ant, and he was always going to discover it eventually. I think on his own, he needed to grow up and to see things. Does that make sense? Just to more things on the court. Like, as he, you know, he's not playing for Georgia anymore. I think eventually he would have got better. Even under Ryan Saunders, I think eventually
he would have gotten better. For sure.
Yeah, but I think they run a lot of actions now that get him going downhill off the catch rather than just isolation. He's going to get a fair chunk of isolation buckets just because that's what Anthony Edwards is, kind of, and that's what he's always been in lower levels, is someone who just has the ball in his hands all the time and just, you know, can go at a defender, and he's quicker than most guys, he's stronger than most guys, you know, he's more athletic than most guys. But lately they've been running sets that get him curling around into the paint. They had, I think, two or three tonight where he just curls off a double drag screen straight round it into the paint, and Russell or Rubio can just feed him in stride. He takes one step and dunks the ball. Like,
yeah,
that's the kind of stuff that we just didn't see from Saunders, and it's the kind of stuff that we've watched Ant a lot. I think by now you realize that Ant is definitely one of those guys that just needs to see the ball go in. Like, he can go 0 of 10. Until he sees that ball go in, and then he can hit 7 straight shots. Or he can, you know, what game was it? Maybe against Utah, one of those games where he had 3 points or something in the second quarter. And all of a sudden, he hits a layup and, you know, he finishes with 25, 26 points. And he's the best player on the court in a win. Like, Ant needs to see the ball go through. And getting him an easy dunk or an easy layup is the best way to kind of spark him when he's having a game where he's a little bit quiet. So there, that's just, it's the little things I think that have with Finch that have uplifted all of his players. He seems to have figured out fairly quickly what makes guys tick, you know, like what makes guys play well and what positions they need to be in, what sets need to be ran for them, whether they need to be involved all the time or they need to be involved, you know, some of the time, and they can still stay good. Like, it's, he seems to have figured out his personnel really quickly. And I think that's half the battle. It might even be more than half the battle as a coach, is figuring out your personnel and what makes them tick and what makes them good players, and then putting them in positions to be those good players. And that to me is the most impressive thing about Finch, you know, overall.
And I think too, like, I mean, April was the Wolves' best. I mean, what, they had 8 wins or in April? Probably the most. I shout out to our friend Jake Graffs, but I think the Wolves had the most wins in April they've ever had in franchise history, which partly is tied to like this weird COVID season, but also just kind of shows you like where we've been as a franchise. But I mean, yeah, go look at just like month by month splits. Ant took less shots in April than he played 3 more games in April than he did in March, took less shots in April, was more efficient from 2, was more efficient from 3, had his career high in assists, his points per game actually ticked down a little bit. And they were playing their best basketball ever. You know what I mean? So for these, again, no clout for these people, but for the nerds who think that Ant's just about scoring, right? Like, it's not just about that for him. Going back to the Ryan Saunders comp, and again, there's some tweaks here and who was available and stuff, but Ant basically doubled his rebound totals and his assist totals when Chris Finch came in. And like, it went from being, you know, I'm averaging 3 rebounds and 1.5 assists to like, you start averaging 7 rebounds and 4 or 5 assists. Like, that's how you become that next level of player. You're not just Jordan Clarkson on steroids. You're really more of a well-rounded franchise guard. And you're right. I jokingly said 180% goes to Chris Finch. Ant was going to figure some of it out, But, you know, the narrative on Ant pre-draft was that he needed to be in a spot that was good for him, because there are ways that you could have put Anthony Edwards under a Ryan Saunders or under a lot of coaches and just had him chuck. And it would have been really bad for him. And I think you're starting to see Chris Finch tweak. Just again, he's making tweaks that I don't even think Ant realizes coach is making. But he's starting to just mold him into a little more of a winning player rather than just this complete, you know, Lou Williams shot chucker or something. Like it's kind of like the same thing happened with Trae Young when the Hawks fired Lloyd Pierce or whatever and brought in their new coach, like brought in Nate McMillan. They just did little tweaks to make Trae Young just a little more of a winning player. And Trae's always going to be that guy who's going to pull up from a heat check. Ant's always going to take heat check threes or do some crazy shit. But just those little things at 19 to get him learning how to play and then rewarding him with 8 wins in April in the best month that dude played, that I'm so glad. Like, I feel like we've pivoted. Like, we didn't even realize now that we lost the game. Like, I feel like we're basically pretending like we're on a 5-game winning streak. So what?
Well, that was the plan, to optimism ourselves into thinking that we were still winning.
I always railroad these things. And you're like my best friend for letting me just take it over. But you mentioned early on that you wanted to talk about D'Angelo Russell quick. So do you want to hop on that?
Yeah, well, let's finish on that. And I think this whole podcast, I think, has kind of tied into each other well. And this topic is the same deal, is that one of Chris Finch's successes, personality-wise, is getting D'Angelo Russell to not only accept being a sixth man, which is just bonkers to think of, you know, even for Jason Rose is probably sitting in his office right now, is probably thinking, how in the world has, you know, this happened? And even more so, how in the world is it working so well? Like, D'Lo was off when he shot tonight. I know, I'm sure if I logged onto my Twitter timeline right now, I'd have a lot of people that have turned on him completely, but he has been awesome since he came back. And he's not only accepted a bench role, he's accepted it with open arms, and like, he hasn't let his ego get in the way at all. He's playing so well, as you know, off the bench. He's still getting good minutes. He's defensively, he's better. He's giving more effort than he ever has. He's shooting the ball well. He's making a very obvious, concerted effort to get other guys involved. I think D'Lo's been great lately. And I think I think more than any player, you know, we just spoke about how much Finch kind of has boosted Ant's game. I think more than any player, Finch has salvaged some of D'Lo's reputation.
That's such a great point.
That's what I wanted to ask you about. It's just like, what do you think of D'Lo, and especially what do you think of this bench role? Like, do you think it's something that is going to continue? Is it just like a late season aberration? Like, what's your thoughts there?
I thought before the game, Chris Finch had said something. Someone asked him a question about, like, is this a long-term thing? And he was pretty adamant that, like, it wasn't. Just kind of like a why mess up a good thing right now? Because the Wolves have been on a good thing. And I don't know. Like,
it can't be. It can't be a long-term
thing. And I still, I mean, I do think you gotta kind of start the guys that make $30 million. But without diving into analytics, or, you know, yes, he shot 1 for 12 from three, or diving into all this other stuff, because that's where Jake excels and Jack excels and Dane excels. I excel just on all the other shit that you can't measure, so you can't beat me in an argument. D'Angelo Russell has been a fantastic teammate. Like, I don't think we talk about that enough. Like, I know
from day dot as well.
Dude, he's like, I know it was really poorly executed, and I even cringed at it a little bit when, like, LaMelo Ball got hurt and Russell tweeted that night, like, Ant Rookie of the Year or something. It was like, timing was a little off. But he was the first, I mean, okay, if I can toot my horn once, I think I was number one and then D'Angelo Russell was number two. But D'Angelo Russell was way on Jaden McDaniels before, like, anyone. Like, he was building that guy up in game four when Jaden was, you know, like, spot minutes, like 3-5 minutes. He was like, Jaden's a dog. Like, he's going to be awesome. And we're like, okay, maybe he's just, you know, blowing smoke up a rookie's ass. But he was in on that. He loves his teammates. There's not a lot of guys, for what people think of D'Angelo Russell and his way he plays or the way he carries himself, there's not a lot of dudes who would just come off the bench, for the third worst team in the league and just be like, okay with it. And he hasn't said a peep. And that's the thing that I've been like really the most impressed with. Like the guy that made his first wave in the NBA with the whole like Nick Young, the LA Lakers, like cell phone drama, for him to kind of come full circle to be like one of the best teammates that guys can have. I think that's phenomenal. I really do. I think that's really big for this team going forward, because when you're young and your leaders are still 25 years old or 24 years old, it's awesome to see how he's really accepted that. But to answer your real question, like game one of next season, he has to start. there's it doesn't matter if Cade. Maybe Cade Cunningham. See, I don't want to think about that yet. But like, he has to start. But I do really think that Chris Finch embraces that idea of it doesn't matter who starts. Like, you can just go throw anyone. I mean, teams do that all the time with centers still, right? Like, they start some weird center for 4 minutes to set the tone, and then that guy doesn't play the rest of the game. I don't think that's what he's doing with Rubio, because Rubio still plays a lot, but Russell's still getting his minutes, and now he's getting more minutes, and his minutes restriction's been lifted. So Russell has to start on this team, but I've been impressed by how he's carried himself more than anything. And then, as you notably said, he's been awesome. Like, he's been playing fantastic.
Yeah, he'll start next season.
Yeah,
I'd be very surprised if he didn't. I mean, he's not. They're not. Like, if Justin Rosas like allows Chris Finch to not start D'Lo after what he gave up, especially if they lose the pick, then Chris Finch must have like some dirt on Jurs or something.
But don't you think it's pretty impressive? Because I think today was the first day where someone asked Finch if the minutes restriction had been either like lifted or he was given a longer
D'Lo played 33 minutes tonight. Like, that's about, he's never been a high minute guy even when he's healthy. Like, he's always been like a low 30s.
But, and again,
so
I'm
there's
not,
no restriction.
I'm not a defender of any player, well, except Jaden, but like, I don't care who's on the team. I just want them to win. But don't you think that's, as again, I'm partial here, but don't you think that's pretty impressive that like they were like, yeah, he's going to play more minutes, and Russell wasn't behind the scenes like, yo, coach, you have to start me. Like, he hasn't made one peep. And we talked to people off of Twitter, like, right? Like, you and I talked to people outside of the internet, and he hasn't made one issue about coming off the bench. And maybe that's because he knows he's going to start when shit really matters next season. And maybe he's like, I'm cool with that, coach. But if that's the case, then it's really cool that he's like, hey, let these other guys get that starting spot, and then I'll come in and do my thing.
And I think that the way that it works is that the guys have bought in that Finch's system works and that they can, eke out wins or at least compete in most games. Because I guarantee if they lost their last 10 games, D'Angelo Russell doesn't want to come off the bench anymore.
Well, we saw that with Ryan, right? Like, we know that there was more to the Ryan and Russell relationship than maybe ever got out. And the way that Ryan used D'Angelo, I mean, again, Russell was carrying around one bad leg, but
he was carrying around one bad team.
Yeah, well. I don't think D'Angelo thought very highly of Ryan. And I think D'Angelo Russell is a, and this has been said before about him when he was in Brooklyn, even a little bit when he was in LA in pre-draft stuff, if you go look at it, he's like, his basketball IQ is far beyond what people ever want to give him credit for. Just because he takes bad shots doesn't necessarily mean his basketball IQ as a whole is terrible. And I think he sees Chris Finch as you and I do, as a wizard, as a smart guy. And he's like, you know what? Coach is still going to give me all my minutes. I'm always going to close. And that's why he's been fine with it. But yeah, like, to kind of wrap up the Russell thing, what do you think has been his biggest improvement? Because, like, is it his defense? Is it his ability? Like, he gets to the rim way more than he did when he was a one-legged pirate. But what is his biggest thing that you've liked?
I think just the overall, this is a kind of a cop-out answer, but I just feel like the energy, like...
Okay, yeah, no, that's great.
You mentioned it on Dane's podcast, and we've spoken about it before, is just like the how spry he is, and then he's, that newfound spryness is transferring to all parts of his game. He's more energetic offensively. Even when he's taking dumb shots, he's getting into his move quicker to do it. Like, he's getting to the rim. He's cutting way more, which I don't know if that's just what he would have been doing anyway or if that's kind of the Finch's new offense. Defensively, he isn't a good defender still. Let's kind of make that clear. But he's not like, you cannot win if this dude is on the court bad defensively anymore. Like, he's trying. And that, I think that's half the battle for him. He's always going to be limited athletically, laterally. Like, he's just, he'd be a zeroth percentile athlete in the NBA. Like, there's seriously not many guys in the NBA who are less athletic than D'Lo. Like, there's not many 6'4", 6'5" point guards who can barely graze the rim. Like, it's just rare. So that stuff's always going to rear its ugly head defensively. Like, he's never going to be able to do what Jaden McDaniels does on defense just purely from an athletic standpoint, but he's trying. Like, he's trying to be in the right places. He's using that basketball IQ that you talk about to kind of compensate for some of the athletic deficiencies that he has. And that's all you can expect for him. I know Britt Robson put out a tweet tonight, and it was one that, as a play that I noted in my notebook as well, that they were doubling down on Zion, and he was kind of just doing that half stunt from the perimeter, get back to his man. And he did it 4 or 5 times with really, really good intensity. Like, that's all we ask for, I think, as fans, is to just, you know, kind of do your best. Like, and that's what I felt like he wasn't doing his best defensively. And maybe it was the injury, but I just felt like he looked lethargic for the first, you know, whatever, 30 games of the season. And I think it was just, you know, the leg was bothering him. Ryan Saunders was bothering him. The team around him was bothering him. You know, the fact that there was no Karl-Anthony Towns. Ant was still coming off the bench at that stage and just, you know, a flat-out worse player than what he is now. And, you know, I think D'Lo, I don't know if I mentioned this, I don't know if we said this on the last podcast, but I think D'Lo is one of those guys that just, like when the wind is in the sails of his boat, he can go, you know what I mean? But when it's calm waters, he can't create that kind of momentum for himself. Like, Ant can just do anything at any time.
You made this analogy, so you're going to hate this, but Ant can change the wind. You know what I mean?
Right,
like,
Ant
can really make a non-windy day. He can make the wind pick up so that his boat starts taking off. I don't know.
D'Lo needs the wind behind him, and then he can be the fastest boat in the fleet.
And I mean, there's a reason. Because if you're listening to this and you think we're just completely just blowing smoke up D'Lo's ass, there's a reason D'Angelo Russell has played for 4 teams in his young career, right? Like, I know he's a flawed player. There was the moment you talked about with Britt was a really good one. There was another moment, too. It's one of the few things that kind of drive me crazy, but I thought Jim Pete summed it up well. The Wolves were kind of on this run, and D'Angelo Russell was coming down in transition, and he pulls up for – they're going left to right on your screen. And he pulls up for a 3 in transition, and it's just, I hate those shots, right? Because if you have an advantage, you should really be getting to the rim.
Or at least taking 15 seconds off the shot clock.
Yeah.
And, like, that's a 6-second play, you know, no pass, miss.
Yeah,
like,
and I don't know
Chris Finch must tear his hair out at those shots.
Yeah, I don't know who he had running with him at the time. Maybe J-Mac or Jordan McLaughlin was out there, but he just kind of pulled up for this in transition 3, which is one of his things. And Jim Pete just said, you know, that's in his DNA. And he missed it, and I was like, ah, damn it. Just kind of like he missed the one at the end of the game, right? But there is, and I can say this because he was tutored by him for a year, but like, there is a little of that Kobe Bryant in him. You know what I mean? Like, you can't, going back to how we started this, you can't be pissed when he takes those shots. Like, he did that a couple games ago when he had like 14 points in 3 minutes, and he was just heat checking after heat checking, and Dave Benz was having an aneurysm on the call. Like, I was freaking out. Like, that was awesome to watch. So, like, you got to give him that leeway sometimes to take those heat checks or those game winning ISO threes that aren't going to go in. Because he's also shown you this season, it was way earlier in the year when that felt like 46 years ago, but he's shown you this season that he does hit those shots. So, you know,
He's a maddening player by nature.
And that's why why he's available, right? Like, that's why he keeps being on teams. He's not perfect. He's not, you know, a top 5 point guard. He's not Steph Curry. He's not a Chris Paul. But, I mean, even though Chris Paul's been on some teams, like, he's just, that's not what he is. But I think he's so, I know we're wrapping this up, like, he's so much, he gives you so much better than what I was watching with Andrew Wiggins. So I'm just like, whatever. Yeah. So if we had to pay a penalty to get rid of that, I'm we really should have recorded after that Warriors game, because I would have just set the internet on fucking fire with how happy I was. But no, I we should have been talking about a 5-game winning streak. I think maybe when you and I wake up tomorrow and text, we'll be happy that they did. You know, they right now, as it stands, they're the third worst record in the league with 8 games left. The Magic have a half game on them. They do still play the Magic. They do still play the Pistons. It'll be interesting. I have a gut feeling that not all these guys finish the season playing. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if we do see someone. They finish, I think, the season against the Celtics and the Nuggets. I wouldn't be surprised if maybe Carl sat for like 1 game or 2 games, you know. So I don't think they have many more wins up their sleeve, maybe 2, maybe 3. So you were right. It's not going to change the standings too much, but this last week was fun, man. And it, more than anything, it was needed because it gave us real hope. It showed you, I mean, from a basketball standpoint, you're doing breaking down film. Like, wasn't it nice to break down shit that was successful?
Well, I finished 2 articles and, you know, I had, I kind of taken the clips down and stuff for a third, and that's on my 1 article weekly quota. And that, like, that's just, it's just more fun to cover this team when they win. And maybe that's why we're more biased towards trying to keep this win streak going, because we're so super committed to it, you know, as in we take up more time than just watching the game or just, you know, sitting on Twitter. Like, we actually have to create content, and maybe it's just, like, it's more fun to create content. Like, these podcasts get more listens when the team wins.
But it was, though. It's like when you messaged me, like, you had done your work for the week, right? We all have these real important and busy real lives. But when you did that, and then I woke up the day after that Chris Finch wizardry play for Russell to get that last second layup, and you're like, hey, I broke down that entire play. Like, I'm Zach Law. I was like, dude, like, it is more fun to win. That's why. It's not just us, too. Like, we talk to people who know stuff. Like, the team is having a good time. Like, there was something that was told to me where it's like one, I don't know if it was one of the younger guys, but they're like, they were sad that the season was coming to an end. Like, that's crazy, right? Because in January, those guys couldn't get to Cancun fast enough. And now it's like, we're starting to put some shit together that we would love to keep playing. So I think the momentum is building. Tonight it took a stumble. They did choke. There's no way to sugarcoat it. It was in the basketball standpoint, it was a bad loss. You can't lose those games if you want to be a serious contender or, you know, a playoff team. But I saw a lot this last week that kept you and I alive. So that's how I feel.
Well, I think that's the perfect way to end it, is that, you know, we're coming off the back of a game that put a little bit of damper on the spirits. But overall, I think that we, you know, if you're listening to this, you should be more optimistic than you have been all season at the future. I think we both are. And, you know, hopefully we can end this season with a little bit of fun. And, you know, hopefully... the Lady Luck kind of shines down on us on lottery night,
it's still gonna
conversation for another day.
It's going to be fun. I think it's 2 weeks from tomorrow is when they wrap up the season. They have 7 games left, and I think 5 of them are against playoff teams, and then 2 are against the 2 other teams the Wolves are fighting with in the Tankathon standing. So you're going to get a mixture of, like, extremism on one side or the other. But it'll be cool to see how they stack up. Like, they have 1 trip down to Miami. The last time they were in Miami, they had that infamous block on Jimmy Butler. Like, it'll be interesting to see how they close the season and if they can keep this rolling a little bit. And then we say this is so stupid, but, like, it'll be the biggest offseason in franchise history. I think we say that every year, but this will be bigger than last year. It'll be bigger than 2019. This team,
I think it'll either be real. It's going to be either really big. Like, either way, it'll be really big on draft lottery night. But if draft lottery night doesn't go their way, I expect it to be a kind of boring offseason. I don't expect them to do too much because they just really can't, you know, cap space wise. Yeah. And I don't think they have a lot of assets that they're willing to move to get, you know, some sort of superstar. But, like, draft lottery night specifically, I think will be one of the biggest nights in franchise history, especially if they, you know, keep one of these 4 worst records and give themselves a pretty decent chance to to keep that pick, I think that's going to be one hell of a night, you know, good or bad.
We're sick people, but like, I'm excited. I mean, it sucks that like they lost, but I'm already like, this is the longest break they'll have, by the way. They'll have like a 3 nights off for the first time, I think. Hell, I think it's 3 nights off for the first time since January, because the schedule has just been on meth. But yeah, so they had 3 nights off, and I'm excited to see how they rebound against the Grizzlies, because I thought tonight in the post game comments, some of the guys said it, but I think they should have won tonight. They're starting to, I mean, a young team that is the worst, one of the worst records in the league, thinks they should be winning games. And that's a pretty big improvement, if you ask me, especially when you and I were recording podcasts in January and we were just trying to like literally just talk ourselves into not finding a new team.
Yeah, well, let's leave it at that. Kyle, obviously you can find all of Kyle's work over at Tanis Hoopus. You can follow him on Twitter at Kyle Tidy. Kyle, you're a legend, man. Thanks for always doing these with me, man.
Yeah, dude, love it. Keep subscribing, rate, review, Paint Points. This is the best. And let's take a couple days off from the Minnesota Timberwolves, and we'll regroup on Wednesday against the Grizzlies.